welcome to the Conversations with Authors podcast. I'm your host, Alison Thompson, aka the Proof Fairy. Every week in this podcast, I talk to an author about what inspired them to start writing and what tips they would give other aspiring authors. Guest is Gordon Frederick Coggan. Gordon was born in 1938, and his book, The Life of a Yorkshire Lad, tells the story of his life from childhood in a Yorkshire village to the current day, including his time in the RAF when he was stationed on Christmas Island, witnessed several of the UK government's nuclear bomb tests, and even washed radiation from an aircraft wearing nothing but overalls for protection. All the profits from Gordon's book go to LabRats, an organisation that supports nuclear test veterans and their families around the world. Several times in the podcast, Gordon mentions Alan Owen, the chairman of LabRats, and you can find out more about Alan and LabRats in a separate episode. Gordon, it is so lovely to meet you. Please tell me about your book.
Well, can I start by telling you about my first book, which is published on Amazon? I'm afraid it wasn't done very professionally. In fact, I don't profess to be a professional author, really. I just put down how I feel, what I feel. And the first one, it was okay in a way, but I had a few remarks back on, after people have read it. They said it's not very professionally done and so forth. But okay. The second one was far better after you had done the proof fairying.
My proof fairying, yeah, I love it.
Yeah. So my first book was called Christmas Island, 1957-1958. Okay. And that was published on Amazon as an e-book. This guy from South Africa helped me because I used to do a lot of talks to radio amateur clubs, to astronomical clubs, to scouts and girl guides about the nuclear tests. Someone said to me one day, why don't you write a book and people will be able to see it because we find it very, very interesting.
Yeah.
And I thought, well, I haven't time. I'm too busy working. You know, I was, you know, from my life story, how I've worked. Mainly, I think I wrote the book when I retired, the first one, because I was bored. I'd got nothing better to do, if you like, until I found these various hobbies and went back into them. But I wrote this Christmas Island and, that was in 2014.
Okay. Oh, a while ago then, yeah.
Yes. I did get quite a few nice reports, 5 stars, etc., from 2 or 3 chaps that had been there. But then suddenly I was depressed because I got 3, one after another, 1 stars. The guys who said it were people who had been there at the same time. But they were not in the same place as me on Christmas Island. And they more or less called me a liar on some of the things I'd talked about, like large crabs. When they stood on their back feet, they could reach 3 feet in the air. They weren't sea crabs, they were land crabs. Most of them were inland. They were not on the shore where these guys were. And, of course, they were... They were also called coconut crabs because they did like coconuts. Well, in fact, they liked everything.
I know in your book you talk about how you pretty much adopted one as a camp pet, didn't you?
Yes, I did. Well, a lot of the guys did because there were a few dogs and cats, but very, very few. And, of course, you were very lucky if you got a pet or anything. Yeah. Some guys had chit-chats as pets, you know, those little lizards.
Okay, yeah.
Things like that. So other guys like me we adopted a crab and we tied them to the tent rope and dug an hole for them. But eventually, after we kept feeding and bringing them stuff from the mess, they didn't need tying. They just stayed there. They wouldn't move. And they guarded their hole very jealously.
Oh gosh, they knew where their bread was buttered, didn't they? They knew they knew the best place to be.
That's right. And of course, another guy said, "I don't recall anyone getting drowned or attacked by sharks." Now, I felt depressed about that because they'd actually got a sign on the beach stating this, that stay away from the reef, it is dangerous, there are sharks. And eventually they built a tower with a red flag on. And if the tide was in, the red flag told us that there were sharks around. And this was proved, and it proved my point in my book, because it came on Lab Rat's site. A chap was talking about it. He put a photo on showing the sign.
So someone else remembered it as well. So, yeah.
But that didn't help me, not with the book, because they'd probably never seen Lab Rats or that site, you see. Anyway.
But, yeah, so I guess you'd written this story about your time on Christmas Island, and then to have people come along and say, well, that's a load of rubbish, that's not true. That must have been quite hurtful, yeah.
But saying that, I think I've got more good reports than bad ones. But if people are writing a story, they must learn to take criticism as well as give it. That was one of my big faults, and that stopped me writing anymore for a long time, because I thought, well, what's the point? And nobody wants to read it. But they did, actually. It proved by how many publications I sold, you know. So, I mean, they was only on for about, what, $2.99, probably less than that. For each copy of the ebook,
right?
It weren't enough to keep me going. In fact, it weren't even a wage. It was an hobby. Like a silly man I am, I did not keep my password, and I couldn't get through to them at all.
Oh gosh! Without,
and the monies, my royalties had earned, I never saw them until a long time after that, anyway, about 6 months after that. Mm-hmm. And my wife happened to come across something in the drawer, and she tried this password, and it worked. And
yay.
I got some back money, which I gave to my wife because she did it. And it was only about £100. But if you imagine at £2.99 a book, less tax, less everything else what the Amazon take, there's quite a few gone.
That's a good few copies sold, yeah.
Yeah, I know for a fact this one, the new one, The Life of a Yorkshire Lad, that has done remarkably well, in my opinion.
Oh, that's really good.
I know for a fact, because of people who've contacted me, that at least 80 books have gone, whether they're e-books or whether they're paperbacks, I don't know. And I know some's gone to America, some's gone to Australia, and quite a lot over here. So I think it's really doing well.
That's really good. So, yeah, so the Life of a Yorkshire Lad is partly about your time on Christmas Island, but it's your whole life story, isn't it? It's about your career as a trawlerman on the fishing boats, and as a bus driver, and as an HGV driver. There's stuff in there about your painting and about your amateur radio and about your fight with cancer. And there's an awful lot there's an awful lot in there.
RAF Fire Service, who've got a group, well, three groups on Facebook. Lots of books have gone to them. There's a lot more gone to the Isle of Axholme, to my school friends when I was at school.
Oh wow.
Isle of Axholme group, and I'm still pushing it by joining other groups.
Oh, good for you, bit of marketing.
For Alan's sake, not for my own.
Right, because all the profits are going to Lab Rats, aren't they, to help veterans.
Everything, yes, because I I really get depressed about that, hearing about children being deformed.
So these are children who are descendants of the nuclear veterans.
Not through my own fault. Nevertheless, it makes me feel as if, well, I shouldn't have gone there, but I had no choice.
You were doing a job, weren't you? I've done an interview with Alan Owen, and we talk a bit about this, but I've proofread quite a few books for him now about the nuclear tests, and it's something that I didn't know anything about until I met Alan, and it's a really unpleasant part of British history, isn't it?
It makes me cry sometimes, honestly. I have a reoccurring nightmare where I'm lost in this white fog of a bomb, Grapple X. It doesn't bother me when I'm conscious, but at the time, if I wake up from it, I'm lost. I'm absolutely lost. I don't know where to go.
So this and, is 70 years on. 70 years on, you're still having nightmares about it.
My heart's going like this.
So you've talked about your first book. Why did you decide to write another book?
Now that's a different story. The reason I started to write about it mainly was, I mean, for 50 years, we weren't allowed to open our mouths about the bomb or anything else. That was, we'd signed the Official Secrets Act, and that was it. We couldn't say nothing, not explain it properly. It was only after the 50 years where the freedom of speech came back that I started giving these lectures to these different societies and clubs. Anyway, let me just get back to where we were.
So the life of a Yorkshire lad.
Yeah, that was the main reason I wanted to write about the Yorkshire lad, and that was to pass it on to lab rats, because I'd love to be able to help in some way. Well, I hadn't got a lot of money, only my pension and a bit of pension from my job and my RAF, which didn't leave a lot after paying the bills. So I asked Alan if he wanted to put it on his site, and he said, well, why not publish it? Why not get it going, and let's see if we can get it going? He says, I don't know how to do it myself, not really. He says, I'm not qualified. He said, but I'll give it a go for you. And then he came back and said, I've got a very nice young lady who's willing to proofread it for me.
So how did you go about writing it?
I had foolscap paper. I wrote out my plan, how I was going to write it, different chapters, etc., jotting down notes for each chapter in my life, going back to my family history and so forth, asking my mother questions, and as she was still alive then. I think I might as well have handwritten it the way I went on, because I ended up with about 40 pages, foolscap pages of notes. Because throughout my time in the RAF, I've had to use typewriters to type everything, I become very proficient at typing. I can more or less touch type, not like a lady can, not a professional one, but I can go at a fair old whack, you know. And the modern computer has a word, a word processor. You can check your words and your spellings, because I'm not the world's best speller in any case, but I can get along pretty well, but I can also check it with a processor. So I did all this writing of the pages and taking notes and so forth, and I set myself an agenda, like I'll write a chapter a day, or I'll try to write a chapter a day. Sometimes I couldn't. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it took me 2 or 3 days to finish a chapter. But you probably noticed my chapters are not that long anyway. Sometimes I'd write maybe one chapter, sometimes I'd write half one, maybe the next day I'd write a couple. And then I decided, I've got to write more pages than this, so I kept adding things to them. otherwise not worth putting it on with 50 pages. And I kept adding to it and adding my life as true as I could remember it, right through to the end. When I'd finished I'd printed it out on the printer. I'd finished that the same year as I retired. Well, I forgot about it. It went in the drawer. Well, we can't afford to get it done, because some publishers, Amazon only just started publishing things free at the time when I first published it. I didn't even know about Amazon, but I did know that many people who I'd tried to contact said it would cost about £400-500 or something like that. A lot of money anyway, more than I could afford. I threw it in the drawer, more or less finished. Mm. And then when the pandemic came, I got it out again. Yeah. Started adding things to the chapters and to the end bit. That made it from, I think, 54 pages to 100 and something,
Wow, doubles it, yeah.
It was reading other books that made me think, well, there's not enough in this. There's not enough pages. I've got to do something else. And I didn't think about it at the time. That's why it went in the drawer as a manuscript, finished as far as I was concerned. And the pandemic came along, going through everything, and I thought, the book? Well, so much has happened since, so much I can remember, else I started adding more to it, So my wife, Mary, she played hell with me because I was spending so much on paper, reprinting everything.
But like you said, something good to come out of the pandemic. We've got to look for the good things over this last crazy year, I think, haven't we?
Yeah. She said, you printed that 4 times already.
Well, it was definitely worth it. It was worth the effort and worth the paper. The last section of the book includes some of your paintings. So what's the story behind those? Why did you decide to include those in the book?
The paintings, I thought, well, I've got a gift in a way that I like painting. Why not show them off a little bit? I mean, I knew they weren't too bad because they sold in Singapore when I was there.
It's so lovely to be able to show the paintings in your book, because it's another important strand of your life, isn't it? That you've done all this, the military career, the transport career, but you're also an artist as well, and you're a carpenter. You make things in wood, don't you? And you have all these other talents as well. To include all that. So once you've gone back to your manuscript and you doubled the pages during the pandemic and you'd added in the extra pages with your paintings, how did you go about getting the book published?
When I first met Alan on Lab Rats and BNTV, I thought, I wonder if he could help and if we could get it to help him, rather than, I wasn't after anything myself. If it could be published, it would probably help Lab Rats and the descendants in getting a bit of money towards their fund. These are the things that inspired me to write this last book.
So did you just hand Alan this huge typed manuscript or this printed manuscript?
Can you send me the manuscript for me to read? So I did.
So this will sound like a really silly question because you've been through so much in your life. But did you learn anything about yourself when you were writing this book, The Life of a Yorkshire Lad?
Yes. Actually, it helped me. It helped me when I was stood up in front of people telling them about my experiences on Christmas Island. Mm. But I still hadn't got the confidence in myself to actually write, not to write properly anyway. I thought, well, no, I'm not going to. I'll probably start it and not finish it and things like that. But I found as I went along, and Mary, my wife, was reading parts of it, it gave me encouragement. It made me have confidence in myself. Again, I thought my English wasn't very good, which I don't profess to be the world star in English in the first place, especially my spelling sometimes. But it came through in the end, and I think that gave me confidence. But I think encouragement from other people give you that. I think that comes with actually doing something, not thinking about it, but actually doing something and let other people see what you're doing.
Yeah, achieving that, setting that goal and achieving it.
Yes, and they give you that self-confidence to carry on and to probably improve. That's what's happened. I can't think of any other change it's made in me except to keep going, to do other things, to do many things at my age where I probably would have sat down in the house, and if I'd had a ball of wool and some knitting needles, I'd have probably started knitting.
And there's nothing wrong with knitting, but no, you've written a great book, and that's an achievement at any age, you know, so to have done that in retirement.
Somehow I can't imagine myself being called an author.
You're an author. Gordon Coggan, you are an author. So how did you feel when you did you get a copy of the book, and then how did you feel when you
Well, Alan said I could have a few books to give to my friends. Well, I got four. I gave my wife one and signed it for her.
Brilliant.
I gave one to Ellen, my daughter-in-law, who corrected a lot of my spelling mistakes.
It must have been quite exciting, though, especially to be signing a copy of your book that you wrote for your wife. That must have been quite exciting.
Yeah.
So you wrote this book in your 70s after you'd retired. Yeah. What tips would you give to other aspiring authors, especially maybe someone who's retired, who's got an interesting life story they want to tell? What would you say to them?
I'd say, right, if you feel that your story is worth telling, tell it. Because there's a lot of people out there who don't know about things like this or what you've done or so on. To them, even if it isn't to you, it could mean it's an interesting read about something you know about what they don't. You might find encouragement in writing about yourself or anything you're going to write about. You put something down on paper and worked on from that. But you'd have to have some kind of a plan. You can't write by just jotting down anything. You've got to write out a plan. How are you going to write it? What are you going to write about? And have those notes in front of you. Otherwise, you'll find yourself doubling back and trying to find out what you've put down, what you haven't, and probably even writing it again.
So for you, having a plan was really important. You think having a plan makes it much easier to get your story down?
Yes, I do. For me, it was. Anyway, it might not be for them, I don't know. But for me, I'd have to have a plan. What else? Try not to do too much at once. Try to do it in stages. Give yourself a plan of how many hours you're going to sit there. Otherwise, it'll become boring. You'll start writing anything just to put it down, and people reading your book will pick up on it. They'll say, well, why is he writing all this twaddle and so on,
So make sure you're writing stuff that's actually worth writing, not just writing for the sake of it.
Yeah, that's right. If you feel as if you've had enough for a day, leave it, come back tomorrow or the next day.
Yeah.
Don't try to do it all in one go, Give yourself time to think. That's what I did. I think it's a good thing.
Yeah.
course.
So make a plan and give yourself time to do it. And,
exactly.
And make it worthwhile. Yeah.
Yeah. You're not racing anybody. You're doing it for yourself. You know, and to let other people see how you're getting on and what you're writing about, not to write about irrelevant things which have no interest to any other person. Would they want to know this? No, of course they wouldn't.
That's really good advice. Yeah, nobody needs to know what you had for breakfast, but I'm sure there are other things that are important.
Well, you've probably read my book. I mean, I've had girlfriends like most of the young chaps when I was younger, but when I was single. But I don't think that's anybody else's business. If I wanted to write a book about sex, I'd write a book about sex, not my life.
Yeah, that's not relevant to your story, is it? Things happen in life that aren't the key factors.
Exactly. That's private. That's your private life.
Yeah.
And there's no need for all that. Yeah. Some people can't write unless they write something like that.
So we're not going to be expecting a big sexy novel from you then.
No.
do you think you will write any more books?
I probably will. I've got a whole stack of poetry I've written.
There's a couple of poems in your book actually, aren't there, as well as the paintings. Yeah.
I wrote children's stories. One especially, which I published myself. I did about 20 little booklets.
Oh, lovely, yeah.
And then I give them all away. I've still got the original.
Mm.
And I painted the pictures in them as well, you know.
Oh.
But I did them on a computer processor, you know. And that was based on Mary's life. I call her Paddy. And this story, it's called Paddy and the Leprechaun.
No,
quite funny actually.
So there could well be some more books to come from you then.
Well, it'd be nice if I could bring myself to start one. That's a big thing. That's what shall I call it? You keep thinking, and that's not good. And eventually, you put the idea to the side again, and you start doing something else and so on. So I don't know really. I'd like to be able to write other things, but it's finding the inspiration to do it, you know.
Yeah, you've got to be in the right mindset, the right mood.
Yeah, you can't just write about any old thing. You've got to, like I said earlier, you must have a plan, and you must be wanting to do it. No, you're starting to write if you don't feel that you want to do it. You know, you've got to be able to want to actually put it on paper.
That's very true. That's very true. So thank you so much. It's been an absolute pleasure talking to you and finding out more about the life of a Yorkshire lad from the Yorkshire lad himself.
I'm very happy to help Alison like you did for me. You helped me tremendously.
Thank you to Gordon for being my guest on the podcast today. Gordon's book, The Life of a Yorkshire Lad, is available on Amazon. Just search for the title or for Gordon Frederick Coggan, C-O-G-G-O-N. And if you're interested in the work of Lab Rats, you'll find their website at www.labrats.international. This has been a Proof Fairy production in collaboration with my dogs, Buddy and Casper, who had an awful lot to say today. You can find out more about me, aka Alison Thompson, the Proof Fairy, and the services I offer authors on my website, www.theprooffairy.com. If you've enjoyed this podcast, then please subscribe to it, share it, rate it, or even leave me a review. And I'll be back next week with another inspiring interview with another amazing author.